The EFF is in a tailspin. They've already been mired in a crisis of their own making, an airing of dirty laundry for one of their own most prominent members this week. Actually, the person we interviewed just a few days ago, Naledi Chirwa, you may have heard that interview. And just a few minutes before we started recording this episode of News Worth Knowing on the issue, the Commander-in-Chief himself, Julius Malema, weighed in. Late at night on Wednesday, the 6th of March, he made the situation so much bigger. He really can throw paraffin on a small fire and make it a bonfire. And he chose to do that about a controversy involving a member of his own party. So we're going to tell you all about what's gone down in the last few days that has truly bewitched the whole country. And on our second story for News Worth Knowing, we just need to talk about how brutally exposed the Cape Independence Party was. They're one of these little parties, or like, by little, actually calling them little is a disrespect to little parties. They are nothings in the grander scheme of things, but they've been shouting very loudly and getting some very big media attention, bigger than their station, because of this enormous agenda that they have, this crazy agenda to rip South Africa apart by going independent, making the Western Cape independent. And we have to talk about how they expose themselves. Welcome to the show. This is News Worth Knowing. This is The Issue with Dan Corder, because we all know that South Africa is a movie. Welcome to the watch party. South Africa is wild and overwhelming. And on this show, we explain, analyze, and understand the biggest news stories and issues facing this country every single week. Two episodes of The Issue come out every single week on podcast and also in video form on YouTube. And we also release weekly exclusive episodes of interviews and analysis on Patreon. Go find us there. Lastly, if you're new here and enjoy the episode, it would be so wonderful if you clicked subscribe or follow. It makes a huge difference as we develop the show going forward. Right, let's get into it. Before we dig in, I want to tell you about our latest Patreon exclusive. It's with Africa Check. They're an amazing organization that literally works every day to fight fake news and disinformation. They've got a team of researchers who every single day combs the internet to find fake news. They detect it, they track it, and they expose it and fight it. They are doing the most amazing work using WhatsApp in a creative way, using new tools in a creative way and a smart way to fight disinformation in South Africa and keep us safe. And they also are doing amazing work teaching South Africans how to be more solid in being able to spot and resist fake news and resist spreading it. So less than 100 rand a month to support the show by subscribing to our Patreon. And in exchange, you also get one expert interview every single week. This latest one is with Kaylee Clifford from Africa Check. Go check it out. Right, let's talk about the economic freedom fighters. Just on Monday, we released our exclusive interview with Naledi Chirwa of the EFF. She is one of their most famous members. If you didn't hear the podcast at the interview, she became famous across the country during FISMA's fall. She was a loud and significant effective protester at Tux University. Then she joined the EFF. They elevated her to being one of the youngest members of parliament in the history of this country. She's one of the most famous fighters for equality, women's rights, women's protections. She's also a champion of black women specifically and does a lot of work. You would have heard it on the interview talking about how black women are the most downtrodden people in South Africa who need to provide the most redemption to give them the opportunities and fair treatment that they fundamentally deserve. And so on Monday, we woke to a tweet from Naledi Chirwa. We did not know that this letter that she tweeted was coming. She requested an interview early last week. We interviewed her middle of last week, released on Monday. We did not know this was coming. She hadn't told us on record or off record, on air or off air, that she was going to post this letter or even that this was going on. But this letter, it sounds innocuous. It sounds like a nothing. It was essentially an apology to the economic freedom fighters as a broad political movement for not rocking up to a budget speech that she was supposed to attend, not to speak, but to be a representative of the EFF. Sounds like a whatever, right? Oh no. And I'm actually going to read you her letter word for word so that you can understand why this uber fallout has taken place across the country. So it says, public apology on failure to attend the budget speech in Parliament on the 21st of February 2024. By the way, she posted this apology at nearly 10 p.m. on the 4th of March. So about 2 weeks after this alleged incident. She says, public apology, fellow fighters and South Africans. Please note this as my sincere apology for my absence in Parliament on the 21st of February 2024. I am regretful for failing to attend Parliament. My four-month-old daughter was sick, and so I went home. My daughter is currently with my mother until post-elections, this to allow me the opportunity to be completely engaged in organizational work during this period and to form part of the collective that will usher an EFF government post-29 May 2024. I reported my absence from organizational duties to the organization and not to the designated whip in our caucus in Parliament, and am particularly regretful for this. I attended the PC for Higher Education in Parliament on the virtual platform on the same day. I contributed to the business of the day. Unfortunately for the budget speech, there was no hybrid facility that could allow me to be present online, only physical attendance for the budget speech, thus my inability to be present. This has no bearing on my commitment and dedication to my beloved organization and South Africans. I do not doubt my commitment to the movement of the people and the responsibility we have been entrusted with in the Parliament of South Africa. This is the primary reason why I went on maternity leave a day before I gave birth and returned 2 months prior to the lapse of my maternity leave. I will duly fulfill the reprimand set by the organization for my absence on the day to purchase two gazebos before the 28th of March, and second to that to publicize this apology, as I have now done. Yeah. And did that go viral? Now, Lady Chira was trending, top trending in South Africa almost from the moment she hit publish or post. I can't say tweet anymore, apparently. Thanks, Elon. Explosive, right? Now, she will be saying, and she has said, I apologized. Sincere apology. I explained the situation. I apologize. Now I just want to move on. I've apologized to the organization, bought these gazebos. By the way, a lot to unpack here. Before we dig into the serious stuff, what... Because since when are gazebos the currency for making mistakes? Like did I miss an email? Did all of you in South Africa get this correspondence saying that the way to atone for errors is through gazebo gifts? Like, what? Doesn't that sound odd? Isn't that so weird? I apologize. Here are two gazebos. Apparently, these EFF style gazebos are like 5,000 rand each. Like, and also, what is the currency or what is the exchange rate? Errors to gazebo atonement. Like, if it's two gazebos for missing a meeting you were supposed to be in at work, is it like five gazebos for lying to your partner? Is it like 25 gazebos for cheating? Like, it's just a crazy thing to happen. I atone by purchasing these gazebos for my organization. Anyway, if you got any theories on that, let me know. If you're an economist, call me. I want to talk about it. But let's dig into the serious points of this apology letter. So, at face value, this is a mess. Because Naledi Chirwa would have known exactly what she was doing when she framed it in this way. Remember, she apologized, right? She didn't have to tell us why she missed the meeting. She didn't have to tell us all this other stuff about her life and her child and her mother and the gazebos. She chose to do all those things to frame the situation in a certain way. So she said, I've got a newborn child, 4 months old. The daughter was sick. I needed to go home and look after the daughter. So immediately that frames the EFF as deeply unreasonable, inconsiderate of mothers, young mothers, new mothers, by expecting her to be at this budget speech. And then when she wasn't, forcing her to apologize and buy gazebos. Immediately it frames it like that. It also frames the EFF as unreasonable because she makes the specific point that, again, she didn't have to make, that she informed members of the organization just not the right channel, the specific communication channel to the caucus. So again, the EFF sounds like unnecessarily harsh and heavy-handed on this woman who's just trying to help her daughter. Then she adds a bunch more. She says, so committed am I to the EFF that I will stop being a mother. I've given my newborn daughter to my mother, this daughter's grandmother, until the election so I can fully dedicate myself to the organization. Now, she might be saying, I'm just proving my commitment to the cause and my unyielding dedication to getting an election victory for the EFF. Of course she's saying that. She has been saying that. Like, proving how committed to the struggle and the political fight she is. But what it really does, and she definitely knows this, she knew this when she was writing this, is it makes the EFF look so cold and harsh on women. Like, Naledi Chirwa, their most significant, one of their most significant female leaders and young leaders, key, like the EFF is trying to appeal to women, black people, and young people. Naledi Chirwa has all of those three, the trifecta. And It makes it look, EFF look toxic. Like Naledi Chirwa would feel like she would have to forego mothering her newborn child to fully dedicate herself to the organization. Then she mentions that she, of her own volition, and this has been her defense, I chose to do all these things. But she chose to mention that she only went on maternity leave a day before giving birth. You don't have to, like, I'm the son of a woman who's had five children. So I have a vague secondhand sense of the days leading up to birth. It's not an easy ride, not a great moment for the rallies and the campaigns and the caucusing, you know? And you don't have to have given birth at any point in your life to understand that it's pretty hardcore, pretty crazy actually, to only take maternity leave a day before you give birth to your child. And then she specifically said, I had an allotted maternity leave and I came back 2 months early. Now again, she is claiming, but I was just showing that I'm a proper fighter, like I'm properly dedicated to the cause. But she must have known that, again, she's making the EFF work environment seem so toxic. And so instantly it caused the letter this massive fallout online. You may not have seen it directly if you don't use Twitter. And Twitter is one of those weird, it's a weird, almost unique social media site in that very few South Africans use it. Way less, tens of millions less than Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. But Twitter has an outsized influence on the world because Twitter is the place where politicians and the media go to talk directly. That's why Naledi posted this on Twitter. And that's why all of the discourse around it has been on Twitter. And then you may have heard about this story through reading news websites or watching TV or listening to the radio or now listening to me. Because then the media goes, this is the debate. This is the top trend. This is the thing. This is good content. People want to talk about this. And they regurgitate it everywhere else, their news articles and the rest. So it happened on Twitter, small, but it's reached all across the country. And the debate has been far-ranging, right? There's been a fundamental discussion, particularly amongst women, about the deeply patriarchal, unfair, often misogynistic work culture of the world, that men are allowed to not be attentive fathers or sacrifice any of their career ambitions or prospects to like raise their newborn children. And yet women are expected to be the caregivers, the lovers, the protectors, the person present, and the mothers, while also, if they want to work, working. And then women are often punished for having children, not in an explicit way like I punish you for having a child, but like, oh, you know, woman goes home and helps, and now the man at work in a patronizing voice says, oh, you know, but like, we can't really put her on this job, can we? Because she can't give all her attention. She's not as dedicated. She can't be as dedicated as we can. Oh, maybe she won't get the promotion or the bonus. And immediately a woman's stock falls. So instantly there was this conversation. But it was also hyper-intensified by the fact that the EFF has for many years been accused of being a pretty misogynistic, toxic place that is male-dominated and patriarchal. Not least because it is built around an almost cult-like obsession with and dedication to pleasing the commander-in-chief. And all of the commander-in-chief's most significant lieutenants are men. Floyd Chivambu, Museni Ndlozi, etc. And people were reading Naledi Chirwa's letter as an expose, as an airing of dirty laundry, and coming to her defense. Here are a bunch of extremely well-liked and reposted viral tweets of their own about this exact story. Here's the first one. Naledi, this is also a very dehumanizing thing to do. You're a young mom providing caregiving to a four-month-old baby. Your CIC, Commander-in-Chief, should have exempted you from these duties on the basis of new motherhood. You're even buying gazebos. I find it dehumanizing. Then there's another one. I am so sorry, Naledi. I'm sorry that you spent the best part of your early activism reminding women of their rights only to be later denied maternity leave, and worse, that you have to apologize for prioritizing your newborn's health. Then another one. Naledi is not a fool, exposing the party leadership in that apology for what they are. She did good. Now we know. And there's another one. I don't think any mother should issue a public apology for taking family responsibility leave. However, we all know that when we take leave, it's a must that we report to the correct person. However, I don't think Naledi should have been made to issue a public apology. And another one. What kind of toxic environment is Naledi working in? The details of that apology are chilling, just unacceptable. Here's another one. Even telling us she cut her maternity leave 2 months short and only starting it the day before giving birth, she was fighting. That letter was malicious compliance, and I'm 100% here for it. After all the dedication she's shown to that party, I hope she whacks them again. And another one. A pro-worker, that's inverted commas, not my emphasis, a pro-worker organization, again, inverted commas, committed to gender empowerment. So a pro-worker organization committed to gender empowerment that publicly humiliates a mother of two after she cut her maternity leave 2 months short because she had to take her sick baby to hospital after she reported her absence to the organization. The math is not mathing. And then one more. I've watched Naledi Chiroa's work on behalf of the EFF for years now. She is consistent in her commitment to the pillars. She is consistent in her commitment to the poor. She is consistent in her commitment to the party. Why isn't she allowed to be committed to her child? Oh, and then one more, just one more. I do get the sense that Naledi wrote that apology letter specifically so it would elicit this kind of response from us. Like, we didn't need to know about the gazebos, but it's good. I've always said that the main problem with the EFF is its testosterone-laden leadership. So, Naledi Chiroa is unbelievably smart. She definitely knew what she was doing. She knew what the response would be. What people would infer from, they didn't have to infer, like what they would understand about what she was saying. And yet since then, she's been pleading innocence from that and dealt out some serious clapbacks to people trying to stand with her and people who are criticizing the EFF based on her words. She's been going to the mattresses, as they say in the mafia, and a ton of other thousands, honestly, of people who champion the EFF activists and supporters online, particularly on Twitter, have been fighting for her too. They've been saying, we accept the apology. There's nothing wrong with her letter. It doesn't say anything else about the EFF. She was just proving her commitment and her struggle credentials. And we stand with her. And if anybody comes and attacks the EFF, it's an agenda and it's a propaganda machine. And they've been waiting for this chance. And they're lying and they're twisting the words and they're gaslighting. And they're trying to tell you something about the EFF that's not true. And that's been the fallout over the last 3 days. And it's come to seem pretty reputationally damaging for the economic freedom fighters, which is why we have to wonder why Julius Malema just did what he did. Because again, just a few minutes before we started recording this episode, Julius Malema weighed in. And as I said at the top of the show, he would have known that this was like throwing petrol on a fire. His weighing in. He hadn't spoken about this at all. His weighing in was going to have a seismic effect on the story, change the narrative and direction, and make the story way bigger no matter what he said. But what he said was pretty extraordinary. He said, "The letter's inappropriate insinuations have forced our movement into a defensive stance, detracting our members from the immediate task of doing door-to-door because they must now defend their movement from rubbish. In situations where we must choose between an individual and the organization, we must always prioritize the organization at EFF South Africa." Sure. That is a wild statement. So he's saying the letter, he clearly means Naledi Chiroa's letter, the letter's inappropriate insinuations. Now, a couple of people online in the last few minutes, because Lord knows this is another top trend in South Africa, it's blown up in the last few minutes. This is really breaking. A couple of people had said, oh, no, but maybe by inappropriate insinuations, he meant like the insinuations made by other people who's not Naledi about the letter. But the vast majority of people have read the obvious, which is when you say the letter's inappropriate insinuations, it means that the letter was full of inappropriate insinuations. So he described the other things that Naledi Chiroa mentioned in her letter as inappropriate insinuations, and that they forced their movement into a defensive stance and detracted their members from what they were supposed to be doing. And now they must defend against rubbish. He is clapping back and putting down Naledi Chiroa and putting her in her place, reducing her apology to some kind of stunt with inappropriate insinuations that have been harmful to his organization. The fact that he has weighed in means that he has deemed that he had to say something or wanted to say something to change the narrative. The impact of Naledi Chiroa's letter has been so large that Julius Malema thought, instead of staying away from this and letting it peter out, this has actually had such an effect that I need to change what is happening here. And he also almost certainly said this because he does not want the economic freedom fighters fighting for a letter that makes him and the fighters look bad. Those inappropriate insinuations about toxic, masculine-dominated, testosterone-laden, misogynistic, patriarchal work environment and political organization. This is wild what the commander-in-chief has just done. And then he says, in situations where we must choose between an individual and the organization, we must always prioritize the organization. He's literally saying, you have to choose. And Naledi has done something wrong and you need to choose the organization. He is saying, abandon her. He is saying, cut that loose. And we don't know what's going to happen to Naledi Chiroa from here on in. Lord knows if you've been following the EFF, if you know that if you please the commander-in-chief, you have a great life. If you displease the commander-in-chief, your political career gets hella short, hella fast. Hella suddenly. But he's literally saying, you got to choose between the individual and the organization. You must choose the organization. Saying that choosing Naledi is not the same as choosing the EFF. You got to choose the EFF instead because they are different now. And he has made an absolute fool of the thousands of EFF supporters who have been fighting for Naledi Chirwa in the last 72 hours, who've been going to the mattresses with her, batting against all the criticism, saying, no, her apology was good and we accept and we stand by it and everything that she said was justified and legit and okay. All of those thousands of people who've been saying that to try and defend the EFF have now been humiliated and told off and been corrected by Julius Malema. It is a hella, hella uncomfortable moment for the economic freedom fighters. And Malema weighing in has entrenched this as a massive incident. It's made it all the bigger. And we really now need to see how long this cooks for and how much of an effect this has on the reputation of the fighters permanently, how much it affects them going towards the election. I don't know whether they can actually afford to punish Naledi Chirwa. I don't know if they can. She's young. She's black. She's a woman. She's one of their most famous fighters. She's got over 100,000 followers on Twitter. She is a household name for so many households across the country. And if they do, they're certainly not beating the allegations. But this tweet of Malema's is definitely not actually beating the allegations either. So the EFF is in a real crisis right now, a real bind. And look, usually when the EFF wants to change the narrative, they lash out externally. They try to find something, maybe because they didn't have a State of the Nation address this year because a couple of their members were banned from going and so the whole party boycotted. They felt like they haven't had a drama in a while. I mean, it has felt weird. It almost felt like an EFF drama was coming, you know, the way that it gets weird if we had too many days of electricity without load shedding. Surely the load shedding must be coming. But they wouldn't have wanted this. And I wonder if they're going to try and machinate a new crisis to distract us from this. That is them lashing out externally at somebody else to just try and change the narrative and change the focus. But this is a really extraordinary development now and a real incident as we lead up to the next election on the 29th of May. Right, so that was the first big story. Yo, we went deep there, but we really had to talk about it. And I'd love to know what you think of it. We got another news story. It's going to be much shorter, I promise. It's just, you got to laugh sometimes, but sometimes on Newsworth Knowing, some of the stories are so big that you've really got to give them the attention they deserve, even as we want to talk about a bunch of stories. So this one is just... oh, it's terrible. It is so embarrassing. So the Cape Independence Party, they're one of these tiny kind of lunatic fringe organizations that believe that the Western Cape should split from and the South Africa and become independent. They're also one of these lunatic fringes that believes that it's possible, like that could ever happen, which it can't and won't. The way South Africa is designed, from a constitution to a parliament to an executive, it just won't ever happen. But they believe it can happen and that it should happen. They're one of many of these tiny lunatic fringes. And they are part of this ecosystem that's been trying to convince South Africa that actually tons of people in the Western Cape want independence, that they want a referendum and they want independence. So it was unbelievably awkward a few days ago when they were quoted by News 24 as being incredibly upset with the IEC because, so to get on the ballot, you need to get a certain number of signatures, just supporters, can even be an online signature to just show that there's a decent groundswell of people who want you to be on the ballot. And then if you get that, then you can be on the ballot and then people have the option to vote for you. So this was just to get on the ballot. They needed 7,000 signatures, even just online signatures, to get on the ballot in the Western Cape. They needed 13,000 to be eligible for one of their members to become a member of parliament at a national level. And just of a few days ago, just before the deadline for online signatures to get on the ballot, they had 200. No, you're not mishearing that. No, I didn't misread the zeros. It's not 2,000, it's not 20,000, not 200,000, not 2 million. 200. 200. Do you know how little that is? 200 online signatures. They needed 7,000. Actually, 13,000 to get, you know, a member of parliament. But like 7,000 just to be on the ballot in the Western Cape provincially. Guys. And we have been told for years that everybody in the Western Cape wants to go independent. We have been made to swallow bogus nonsense, fake, cooked, machinated, twisted, non-evidence, nonsense surveys, totally unsound research trying to convince us that everybody in the Western Cape wants independence. We at one point were told that there are 840,000 people signed up to the cause for Western Cape independence. We have been told at another time that 58% of everybody in the Western Cape wants independence from South Africa. and you only got 200. We obviously, you know, on the issue, we do the numbers, and we did the numbers just so you understand how farcical and embarrassing, how brutally exposing this is. So in the Western Cape, there are 7.3 million people. So 58, let's assume that maybe what they're saying is true, which it's not. But let's assume, for the sake of argument, that it's true that 58% of people don't want to be in South Africa anymore. They want Western Cape to be independent. That means 58% of people out of 7.3 million is 4,311,151.6 people. So keep that amount of people. Now let's take off 200, right? That's the 200 people who've signed the Cape Independence Party to be on the ballot. If that's true, if there are 200 of those 4.3 million people signed, that means that by simple maths, that means that 4,310,951.6 people want the Western Cape to be independent, but find the Cape Independence Party so insufferable that they refuse to even sign an online signature to get the Cape Independence Party on the ballot. That is so humiliating. And maybe now in the last few days, scramble with the press or whatever, they will get their 7,000 or 13,000 signatures. Maybe they will. But the fact that they came this close with only 200 signatures before panic vote is shocking. It's shocking. 200 people is like a neighborhood watch WhatsApp group. That's 200 people. 200 people is not enough to get elected for prefect in a voting system in most schools. Like, there are people who've become prefect in many high schools across South Africa who got more votes in matric or grade 11 or grade 10 than 200 people. I could probably find more than 200 people who would genuinely vote for Bafana Bafana to be the South African sports team of the century. It is so embarrassing. Yo, I'd rather be one of those poor guys who gets rejected on Keeping Up with the Kardashians. I'd rather a situation where I was rejected in front of the whole world on reality TV and my entire existence forever and a day in the celebrity scene would be reduced to that rejection. I'd rather have that. 200 people. Oh, it's so bad. It's so bad and so lovely at the same time. Right, that's news worth knowing for this week, releasing on the 7th of March, 2024. Thank you so much for listening. We'll definitely keep you updated in our new episodes next week. The first one's on Monday. We'll definitely let you know what's going on with the EFF and Naledi Chirwa as this crisis of theirs, this devouring of itself, this disemboweling continues to unravel in front of the whole of South Africa in the public eye. And we'll also be back on Monday with the essay, a brand new deep dive into a big issue facing South Africa. Thank you so much for listening. Go check out Patreon. Remember, I told you at the top of the show, some fascinating interviews there, all available for you and to support the show for less than 100 Rand a month. Right. Have a lovely weekend. Chat Monday.